long or as short as you see, okay?
All right.
Excuse me. Okay, were you originally signed by the Tigers?
Yes. 19th, August 1936.
Okay, so you didn't play till the next year?
No, I come home to finish my last year in high school.
Uh-huh.
And I graduated, of course, in 37.
So they signed you, you're still a high school student?
Right.
You started out at Beaumont, didn't do badly, but they sent you to Lake Charles, where you evidently kind of overmatched the rest of the fellows in the league.
Well, no, you see, when I went to spring training at Beaumont, of course, my first year, there were 90 ball players there at spring training,
mm-hmm.
minor league players. An awful lot of those players had played 3 and 4 years of minor league ball already.
Mm-hmm.
I was signed as a catcher.
You must have been a pretty fast catcher.
I was signed as a catcher,
uh-huh.
and of course, when I went down there, I worked out as a catcher and everything. But I had better speed than what I realized and what they realized. Some of those big lumbering guys, they hit a ground ball to the infielder, and I would beat them to first base with the catcher stuff on.
Wow.
So they asked me if I ever played the outfield, which I had, and they put me into the outfield. Now, our manager, Al Vinson, had been operated on and wasn't eligible, wasn't on the roster when the season started. So out of the 90 guys, I was the only one left to stay as a rookie.
Uh-huh.
And I think I got in a few games of pinch hit and everything. And I think I wound up hitting around 333 or something like that.
With Beaumont.
With Beaumont.
Mm-hmm.
But when the manager had got over his operation and was able to play, somebody had to go. And of course, I was the only rookie there, a guy who had never played any pro ball.
Mm-hmm.
And our minor league ball club, that is Detroit, was Alexander, Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
And all my friends that were there in spring training, of course, had already been shipped out to Alexander. So in order to place me, I went to Lake Charles on option, Lake Charles, Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I played my first year, 37.
And you had a fantastic season for a 19-year-old kid.
Yeah.
Did you ever catch professionally at all?
No, I never caught a game of pro ball.
I'll be darned. Okay, you went back to Beaumont, and you had three just amazingly consistent seasons, 38, 39, and 40. Mid-270s each year, 60-some-odd RBIs each year, a bunch of stolen bases. When you went up in 40, is that right? The end of 40?
I came up the last 2 weeks of 1940.
Okay, and you were still a pretty young man at that point.
Yeah.
Where did you start 41? Did you start that at Buffalo, or did you start with Detroit?
No, in spring training in 1941. Of course, I went to spring training and was hopeful of, you know, going north with the ball club and being with Detroit. And the general manager, who at that time was Jack Zeller, called me outside of the hotel in spring training. And he said, Pat, the manager of the ball club, which was Del Baker, thinks that you ought to go north with the club. I think that you ought to go back to Buffalo and play until Hank Greenberg goes into the Army. See, Hank was due to go in.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, what do you think? I said, well, I agree with you. I would rather be at Buffalo playing than to sit on the bench in the major leagues. And when the time would come that I would get a chance to come up with Detroit, I would have been playing, and, you know, and been in a pretty good groove.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what happened.
Then you came up and did amazingly well.
Yeah, I was hitting better in the major leagues than I did in the minors.
When did you finish up 41, or did they get you for the service in 41?
No, in July the 2nd, 1941, I think it was July the 2nd. We were playing a night game in Chicago against the White Sox. And I hit a ball to the right of Joe Kuhl, the first baseman. It was a base hit in sight, and I'm going down the line. And a pitcher, Dietrich, come running over to cover first base. And somehow, in an awkward way, he was on his stomach with his feet on the bag, both feet.
Mm-hmm.
And as I got to the bag, I tried to step in between his feet and legs, you know, not to tramp on him.
Sure.
And my foot got caught under one of his legs, and I guess I went straight up in the air and looked like I was coming off a diving board. And hit on my right shoulder and dislocated my shoulder and was out for the rest of the year.
Oh, from mid-season on, when you were hitting that well.
Yeah.
Boy, that's awful.
All my dreams were coming true.
Yeah, that sure slowed them down, didn't it? Now, Uncle Sam grabbed you.
Yeah, that's right, 42.
And that was 4 years when you probably would have been at the peak of your career.
Yeah.
Did you get to play ball in the service?
Yes, I did.
Okay, did you go overseas or stay here in the country?
What's that?
Did you go overseas or stay here?
I never got overseas, no.
Okay.
I went to a reception center at New Cumberland, Pennsylvania, and I was down to siding, you know, getting ready to get on a train. My name was called out, and I was sent back to my barracks, and he said that the colonel wanted a baseball team. So I was at New Cumberland a couple of years, and we had a baseball club, and we had fellas like Tommy Hughes, a pitcher for the Phillies,
mm-hmm.
and Elmer Vallo, and guys like that. As they came into the reception center, I would go to the special service captain, and tell him, I'd like to have this guy. So we had a pretty good ball club.
Yeah, I bet you did.
And then from there, when they started to ship everybody out, they shipped me to Camp Syred, Alabama, to the Special Service Headquarters.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, a lot of the guys I had at New Cumberland followed. And we won the championship of Alabama and played Johnny Pesky's team, his naval team in Atlanta,
mm-hmm.
and went all around, you know, played teams like the Camp Campbell Armor Division, and did very well. And, of course, while I was at New Cumberland, before I was shipped out of there, when Mickey Cochran had his all-service team, and they trained at Great Lakes Naval Station, I was named on that team.
Oh, so you must have been playing some pretty doggone good ball there.
Yeah.
When you came back out of the service, you were not as sharp as when you went in. Was that just because of the age, or what was the reason?
Well, I don't know. See, I couldn't throw as well as I could before I hurt my shoulder.
Yeah.
But knowing how to play the hitters and to charge the ball and get rid of it, it kept me in the major leagues.
Mm-hmm.
I would, whenever I come back, of course, 46, I didn't do that well. 47, I started off real good and was named in the All-Star team. And towards the end of the season, I come up with, I don't know whether you'd call it the flu or what the heck I had, but I wouldn't tell anybody. And I kept playing, and I'd be out there, and a cold sweat would, you know, come over me.
Oh, boy.
And but I didn't want to have anybody think that I was trying to get out of the lineup.
Yeah.
In fact, one day I was going up to Steve O'Neill to tell him that, you know, I didn't feel right, but I didn't do it. Now, first time up, I hit a home run, and I was ashamed to go. I didn't feel good. But then, of course, course, all throughout my career then, I would, because I couldn't throw as well as the other guys, I played a whole lot. I filled in, and of course, I got quite a number of games in, pinch hitted, but was thrilled to death to think that I was still in the major leagues.
In those years, 46 through 49, the Tigers really kind of had four outfielders that pretty much played an equal amount of time. You were getting your share, you know, maybe not the 150 games like you would have earlier, but you got your at-bats, and in 1948, you had, a season that today the guy'd be asking for $2 million if you had it.
Yeah, yeah.
You had 23 home runs and 80 RBIs. A real good season. I don't know if you remember my letter. When I was 9 years old, I discovered baseball cards. It was like 1950. Uh-huh. And my stepfather bought me some packs of the old Bowman cards.
Uh-huh.
And in the first two or three packs I got you and I got Johnny Groth. I don't remember who else could have been them. It could have been anybody. But I got you two guys, and you were both on the Tigers.
Uh-huh.
And I decided that the Tigers must be my favorite team since I had two members of the Tigers, and you two guys became my two favorite players.
Yeah.
So I always followed your career as a boy. It just got over with sooner than I wanted it to. I guess probably sooner than you wanted it to also.
Yeah, that's right.
You spent your entire career with the Tigers.
Yes.
And 53 was your last year as a player. You came back to coach in 63. What happened in those 10 years in between?
Well, in 54, I went with Billy Hitchcock to Buffalo. He was the manager, mm-hmm. and I was playing coach. And, I guess about, sometime in May or June that year, I'm not sure what month it was, the manager at Little Rock quit. It was Bill Norman, who later on became the manager of Detroit.
Sure, I remember him.
So I was sent down there as a playing manager for the rest of the year in 54. And 1955, I was a playing manager at Idaho Falls, Idaho, and in all in the Detroit organization.
Mm-hmm.
56, I was at Jamestown, New York, as a playing manager. I was operated on during the season, and of course I was out for the rest of the year. In 57, I went to Detroit as a scout, working under Ed Catalinas,
mm-hmm.
who, you know, signed Al Kaline.
Right.
Like that. And so I scouted for Detroit from 57 on through until 63, whenever I was brought up as a coach under Charlie Dressen.
Did you find any names that we would recognize when you were scouting?
What's that?
Did you sign any?
One of the guys that I guess did very well, I signed Gates Brown.
Oh, yeah.
Out of prison.
Mm-hmm.
Gates was in prison, and I got old Gates, signed him up, and he, of course, kept his nose clean and did a fine job.
Yeah, he could hit the ball, couldn't he?
I signed a guy, Gallagher, that got to the big leagues, left-hand pitcher, and they hurt his arm, but he had a good fastball, a good curveball. I signed the Chip Lang from Montreal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right hand pitcher that got up there, got a cup of coffee, but things didn't work out for him. Ray Orler.
Oh yeah.
In one of my first assignments to scout organized ball, I went out be a 30-game winner.
Yeah, I know Denny. He's I guess we correspond about once a year or so. He's crazy. Tell me about him. He's obviously a great talent as a pitcher.
Okay.
Tell me about Denny. He obviously had a great talent as a pitcher, but he, you know, he's got a screw loose somewhere.
Well, see, when we went over, it was Catalina, Stubby Overmeyer, and I went over to Sarasota to the Chicago White Sox minor league spring training. And we drove over there in the station wagon to pick up Denny. And went upstairs, and they were having an organization meeting. And the way they looked at us, they kind of snickered that we were going to get Denny. I guess they had their problems with him, you know. And, of course, we took Denny back to Lakeland. And he went out and did a good job in our minor league setup. And it wasn't long, he brought him up to the major leagues. Now, a lot of things after I left, I guess when Mayo Smith came in as a manager, I read a lot of things about Denny, about he had an airplane, and he wherever he parked it, he didn't pay rent for it, and he was gas he didn't pay for, and all that kind of stuff. And I always felt, you know, it's like seeing him in Class D, he had a good fastball, not a real good curve, a change up and sort of a sharp slider that I felt kind of close that in this way that as an individual in my first professional scouting that I recommended the guy that we drafted. And of course he went on to, I was sorry to see him get in all the doggone trouble he got into, because I think he had the world with a tail.
I think he did. He is one of the most charming persons that you could ever meet.
Yeah.
My wife has not met him, but she's talked to him on the phone. He's called here, and she's talked to him. And she says, you know, he doesn't sound like a baseball player. He sounds like he could be anything.
Yeah.
I like him a lot, but I don't know if I trust him. That's not very nice to say. Okay, while you were back in Detroit coaching, you coached under Chuck Dressen.
That's right.
How was he as a manager?
You know, when I first went up, a lot of guys said, boy, Pat, he's tough. He'll really be tough. But he was really wonderful to all the coaches, and they brought up Bob Swift, Stubby Overmeyer, and myself as coaches all at one time.
Mm-hmm.
And we joined a ball club in Boston, and so did Charlie Dressen. And that's when they let Bob Sheffin go. And, of course, knowing Bob and everything, and being in the minor league setup as a scout and an instructor in spring training, I got to know Bob. And I went up to Bob and said, Bob, I always thought that if I was going to be a major league coach, knowing you, I would rather come in here as your coach rather than to come in the day that you were let go. And Bob said, Pat, I asked for you two or three times. Well, the thing, I guess, was that I was doing pretty good, they thought, as a scout. And another guy that I scouted at the University of Michigan was Steve Boers.
Oh, yeah.
And when they had Steve in while he was still in school, I guess he told John McHale and Ed Catalinas in their meeting, I was down in another room, that whenever they come out, John McHale said, tell them what you told us. He said, well, I told them, Pat, when I sign, I want you to sign me. So I really made me feel well, real good, you know.
Yeah, it does. It's a nice thing to say.
Yeah.
What year was it? 1966. The Tigers got off to a terrific start, and then Dressen died. Bob Swift took over, and he died.
Yeah.
Who's a Frank Scaff was in the second half.
Yeah.
Obviously, the team obviously folded or did not do as well. How did these losing the two managers in one season, I guess, is unprecedented. How did it affect the players?
Well, nobody really come out and said, you know, how they felt or how it affected them. But you know that, like any one of us, something like that happened. Whether you realize it or not, there's something in there that isn't the same, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe like if for me, you feel, well, no, it hasn't changed, but it does change. And like you say, that was a big blow, losing Charlie and of course Bob. And like Charlie was really, I thought, fair and wonderful to the players. He wasn't the kind of a guy hard to get along with, because as far as the coaches were concerned, anybody he knew or anybody that did things for Charlie, he'd say, how about my coaches? So yeah. we were in everything that he was in.
That's good. That's good. You coached under another manager later on at Montreal that I personally think was an excellent manager, Dick Williams.
Yeah, Dick Williams, yes.
What do you think of him?
Well, I thought that, like, I even said to Dick, I said, you know, Dick, with all the things that go on, you know, in modern baseball and everything, I really give you credit to how you handle the things. And like where some guy might pop off and say things to the players or this and that, but Dick had been through the mill and everything, and he handled everything, I thought, very well. We were standing around the batting cage. I was up there as a hitting minor league, major league hitting coach then.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, if we had a guy come into the minor leagues, they might send me down there for 5 days or so. They sent me into Denver to work with Wallach.
Mm-hmm.
And also they sent me down to Memphis to work with Terry Francona.
Mm-hmm.
They signed him. And both guys really made me look good, because after I left, my God, they were hitting the ball real well. Guys that, when I come back to Montreal, said, Tad, what in the world are you telling those guys? Said, the same thing I tell you, but they listen.
Francona looked like he was going to really tear the world apart, didn't he?
Yeah.
He'd been hooked in the games.
They thought whenever they signed him, you know, and they sent me down there, they were trying to get him to pull the ball and hit for some power, you know, hit some home runs. But Terry wasn't that kind of a hitter.
Right.
He was a guy that would snap that ball to all fields and had good bat control and made contact. And my recommendation was I would rather have a guy hitting 340 or 350 and hit 10 home runs than a guy hitting 220 and hit 25 or 30.
Sure. Oh, yeah. He's had a good year down in Puerto Rico again this winter.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, he hit... I believe he hit like 320 down there, and he hit 340 or something there a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
So maybe he'll come back, but evidently his knees are too bad for him to play every day anymore.
Yeah.
My son's favorite player is Gary Carter, and if I don't ask you about him, he'll never speak to me again.
Uh-huh.
Tell me about Carter.
Well, Gary Carter is just, I had him his first year. He come to Jamestown when we had our rookie spring training.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, they went to Cocoa Beach. And, of course, two or three times during the year, I would go there, and, of course, maybe sometimes be there for 10 days. I had Carter right out of high school. Carter was, like he played ball in the major leagues, was just a bundle of energy, full of life, hustle, bear down. And the thing about Gary, and I used to sit and talk with him, and he had power to all fields. But Gary wanted to pull that ball. And like in batting practice, I guess if he didn't hit 5 or 10 out in batting practice, I'm talking about at home when he had more time, he thought it was a bad batting practice. But I used to try to get him to understand that if he as a catcher had a guy up there hitting, he was trying to pull everything, he would have his pitcher pitching down low and away. And usually when you try to overpower the pitcher's pitch, it's a ground ball down to short, over to first, go get a drink. So that's the thing about Gary. I thought that he had a great arm. He handled the pitchers well. He received well. Hustled, my God, he really hustled. Didn't have great speed. Had the power. And the thing that we were trying to do and to harness was to have him not trying to be a one-way type of a hitter to try to pull everything.
He still, as recently as a couple, 3 years ago, had a wide-open stance.
That's right. And when they pitched him down low and away, if Gary tried to pull that ball, he would look terrible on some of them. On that same pitch, if he'd go with it, he could hit the ball out of right center.
You think he'll be able to come back and have a decent year this year?
I hope so.
Oh, my son hopes so. God, if Gary Carter becomes an axe murderer, I think my son will become an axe murderer. Just thinks he's the greatest thing ever.
Yeah.
Back to your playing days, who were the best players or hitters, I guess, that you ever saw, either played with or played against?
Well, of course, Ted Williams, Joe DiMaggio. Playing against those guys, I thought, boy, they could really hit that ball. Guys like, like on our ball club, of course, Hank Greenberg, I played with Hank. When I come up in 40, Charlie Gehringer, of course, that was only there 2 weeks. And then in 41, Gehringer was there. Fellas like that were, well, of course, they were brought up in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, pretty good ball players.
Yeah.
The best all-around ball player, who was, would that be, you think?
I'd say Joe DiMaggio.
That's for fielding and batting and everything else?
Yeah. Okay. Fielding, throwing, hitting, he had power, he was a good base runner. And I would take Ted Williams as my hitter. And like we talk about Stan Musial and everything, he was in the National League, so I didn't see Stan that much. And Stan only lived, he lived in Denora, Pennsylvania, which is only about 10 miles from where I live.
No kidding. Did you play against him growing up? Or was he was a little older than you, wasn't he?
I don't know. Not much older, I don't think.
He was pretty good, but yeah, you were in the other league. I guess you couldn't observe him like you could DiMaggio and Williams. What about pitcher? Who was the best pitcher or pitchers that you either batted against or played with?
Well, I of course, whenever I first came up to Washington, I had a lot of those knuckleballers. And, of course, I hit against a guy like Bob Feller, Bobby Shantz, Bob Lemon. He was always tough. You start that ball outside, and you swear to God it was going to be a ball. And at the last second, it would just hit that outside corner. Of course, I didn't play against Newhouser and Chuck, but they were great pitchers.
Who was the toughest pitcher on you?
I figure like a guy that would could change speeds real well. And everything would give me more, and didn't throw as hard as Feller, would give me more trouble than Feller. I think a guy like Mr. say, mauve lemon.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody like that that, you know, could hit those corners and everything, and didn't, wasn't the fireballer that, Bob Feller was.
So you were a left-handed batter. I would have thought you would have named a left-handed pitcher.
Well, you know, I always had pretty good luck against left-handed pitchers until they got the idea that a left-handed hitter wasn't supposed to hit against left-handers.
Yeah,
we started a two-platoon.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, I didn't get to play against them very much then. And, but up until they started to do all that two-platooning, I don't know what my average was, but I felt that I was holding my own
mm-hmm.
and doing all right against them.